people's crew.
Yes, yes, yes. Kia ora, everyone. And hello, welcome back to the Be About It show. Hey, fam, I hope you're ready for our next guest because I'm just on a vibe. He's from my hometown. He is doing the most for our community. We've got Dr. Timothy Temoke in the studio doing the most for our community, but also sharing the most of what we do in our community as well. And you guys saw the little preview that we had on the Be About It show Instagram page, but also on Facebook. We were sharing more about what he's done for our people. He's a doctor. He's reflected a lot of his mahi, but also his upbringing, his mana. And what I just had a little conversation with him earlier as well. What he loves, what he's passionate about, you know, who you are is super important. And this is what the show is all about. So thank you, my brother, for coming into the show and coming in to share a lot about your mahi, about you, but also you being about you.
Kia ora. Thank you very much, Tina. It's a pleasure to be here. I really enjoyed being here. Thank you very much for inviting me. What would you like to talk about first?
Oh, yes. I've got like 6 million questions, but we'll just start with the first one. Yeah. Introduce yourself. You know, I know you're from the hometown of 275, baby. Yeah. But how did this whole journey start for you, man? Because your bio, you could have like a full-on novel about what you've done. But how did this whole journey start for you?
Okay, so, in a nutshell, Tina, it's without any ego when I say that there is no one in this country and quite possibly the world that's overcome a life I've overcome and then gone on to be who I am today. Now, I could quite easily now as a doctor ride off into the sunset, relative financial security, and forever the poster child for the little engine that could. But that would do nothing for our people, and it would do nothing for this country, yeah? Okay, so before we get into the mix.
Right.
People out there, I've got to put them in the right space.
Yeah?
Now, because rather than listen to my words, they've got to be in the right space to understand what I'm saying. Mm. So, tell me, Tina, have you seen Pulp Fiction?
Yes, I have. Two times.
Greatest movie ever played. Greatest movie ever made. It's the greatest movie ever made because it's got fantastic dialogue, amazing actors, and the movie chops and changes and prevents the viewer from becoming formulaic with it. It's the greatest movie ever made because of that, and it's also the greatest movie ever made because there's a little bit in there right at the end that's all about me.
Right.
Now, if you haven't seen the movie, it's about a bunch of gangsters doing gangster stuff, yeah?
Gangster team.
Yeah. And there's this enforcer, his name's Jules, and he works for this for his boss. And what he likes to do, the sinister thing he likes to do, is recite a Bible passage before he shoots someone. Mm-hmm. And the Bible passage talks about the shepherd, the tyranny of evil men, and the weak. And he didn't think about it much at the time, but he just thought it was something cold to say to someone before he shot him. And then he has this near-death experience that makes him think twice about what he's saying. And then he realizes that at the end of the movie that he's actually the tyranny of evil men and he needs to be the shepherd. Now, Tina, I've had a dark life, yeah?
Mm.
And there was a point in my life where I was once the tyranny of evil men. But now I'm trying real, real hard to be the shepherd. Now, the people out there, when they heard me say those words that I was once a tyranny of evil men, they all had this experience of uncomfortability.
Mm.
Now, some of them have been really small, hardly even noticeable. Others may have been guttural, and the rest would have been somewhere in that spectrum. What I need the people out there to do is to sit within that uncomfortability.
Mm.
Be one with that uncomfortability. And as you're sitting in that uncomfortability, understand and know that I have been uncomfortable every single moment of my entire life. And what happens then, when you put yourself in that uncomfortability, you put yourself and me in the same plane. And when we're in the same plane, you're able to understand and take on exactly what I'm trying to say. Okay, let's get on with it.
Man!
Right, I was born Timothy Temoke. My mum, she had me. She was part of the urban push for Māori up into the city. She got papu up there, came back home, back to Matata. I was born in Whakatane.
Mm.
She wasn't ready to be a mum, so she gave me to my koro, whangaed me to my koro, which is common with Māori. And then I was given my koro's name, Temoke. And I was raised by them. And for the first 6 years of my life. And they were amazing people, very, very loving, very supportive. The cultural identity was very strong, so I grew up really, really well. And I believe that my ability for empathy and compassion today is a direct result of them. But then I turned six, and by that time my mum decided to take me back.
Mm.
And she had married this guy by the name of Morrison then. But I was born Timothy Te Moke. So I was legally my grandfather's son. So what she did is she took my quarter to court, said this guy that she'd married was my actual dad, and stuck his name on the birth certificate. And then I went from Tim Te Moke to Tim Morrison, and then they uplifted me. Now, this is the beginning of the dark time. My mum was very dysfunctional. So was the man that she married. They abused all kinds of alcohols, all kinds of drugs, and they beat the crap out of me. The stepfather, he couldn't handle me. Looking at me, he every time he see me, he saw another man, and he used to just go off his head. He used to beat the living crap out of me.
Mm.
And so the thing is that I used to get bashed really, really badly, maybe up to three times a week. So by the time I turned 14, Tina, I'm broken, man. Yeah?
Yep.
I'm broken. And so I've stopped going to school, and then and I'm in Māngere, I'm raised in Māngere. But don't get me wrong, I'm not special, because it's happening to a bunch of kids all on my street as well. So we just start gravitating together, as you do. And that became the life of our way of coping, because we started hanging out with each other. We started instead of alcohol and drugs, we started sniffing solvents and glue.
Mm.
Started doing petty crime, and that's when my first experience with law enforcement happened. I was 14, and I got arrested for breaking into a house, attempting to break into a house. I was with this older guy that I knew. He was 16. We got caught breaking into a house. They took us down to the police station. They beat up the older guy I was with. They didn't touch me. My beating would come a couple of years later. And then I was taken to the boys' home, a Wairaka boys' home. It's closed down now. But that was my first experience of a detention facility. Don't get me wrong, looking back on it, I 100% believe that it was definitely part of my pathway to prison. But at the time, I got to admit, I enjoyed it. I liked it because there I was getting fed three meals a day.
Yeah.
I was watching movies on the weekend. We're getting chocolates if we were being good. And I wasn't getting bashed. Well, I was getting into a lot of fights, but there were kids my own size or a little bit bigger. So you know, like I wasn't getting beaten by adults. And so I really, really enjoyed it there.
Yeah.
But looking back at it, yes, it was preparing me for prison 100%. The funny thing is, I was an intelligent kid and right up until I stopped going, and one of the teachers found out I was in there. And she came and visited me. It was quite a shock. She was my English teacher.
Mm.
And then she asked me if I wanted to come and stay with her. And I went, absolutely. I went, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because I was going to get fed there and I wasn't going to get beaten there either.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, man. And so I went to live with them. And they were amazing. The family, the Kays whānau, and they were amazing. They loved and supported me so much. It was unbelievable how much warmth and support they gave me. The thing is, Tina, by this time, I'm broken, like I said.
Yep.
And so,
still there.
Absolutely. So the support and love they gave me, I didn't even know what that was,
yeah.
Let alone what to do with it. So it didn't matter how much love and support they were giving me. I didn't know anything. What is this? And I was that far down the rabbit hole. Girl, I ain't coming back.
That's it.
And so I lasted a year and a half, and then I left. And then within 6 months of that, I'm in Mount Eden for the first time. And that's when became my life in prison. So from 14 to 16, 14 first boys home, 16 first time in Mount Eden prison. I've only done two actual legs, but I've been in prison heaps of times. Like I've been refused bail and just spent months in there at a time. Yeah,
yeah.
I did the, you know how they've got arm cams now?
Yes.
I did the first ever boot camps, man. It's called corrective training at the time. And there were two lots. There was Rangipo and Hautu, and I did Rangipo. It doesn't work, man. I come out of there, just fit.
Yep.
Disciplined and angry. When I come out of there, I went and saw my probation officer, and he said that he got the report from CT, and it was the worst report he'd ever seen. And I took that as a badge of honor. But like, here's the thing, though, right? Here's the thing is, now they've got these army camps on, and they're going to just be just exactly like me. They're going to come out, these young boys, going to come out super fit, super disciplined, super angry, but this time have the ability to take orders. And if I was a charismatic, forward-thinking leader,
yeah,
I would go, thank you.
Yeah.
Mate, you've just made my recruitment that much easier. Absolutely. You have built me up an army, and I thank you for it. This and current governments are like when they look at being tough on crime and tough and disciplined on that.
Right.
It's actually making things worse.
Worse than what it is.
Absolutely.
Facts.
Absolutely. So, like I was telling you earlier, like, in terms of my, the point that makes things like I take, different pathways and that, I've never been a person that's been like that. I've never been a person that's got to a crossroads, taken a right instead of a left, and everything's changed from that. For me, it's been an evolution, and that evolution consists of little increment moments over time, most of them hardly even noticeable, that after an amount of time they've amassed together into a changed perceived reality. I'll give you an example of some of them. You know, there are milestones, and I'll give you an example of one that actually shows the evolution into my darkness, but then also the beginning of an evolution into a light. But if you look at it as a specific point, there was no point in that where you could say, yeah, I made a decision to turn my life around. Okay, so I'm in Waikerea, and I'm just finishing a year. Well, I've got a couple weeks till I finish a year. And I'd thrown a petrol bomb at a busload of people. I've got about I'm in a gang now, and that's a whole nother story. But the thing is that I'm in a gang now, and I'm sealed up with this other gangster. I've got a couple of weeks till I get out, and this gang member, he's got some weed, so we spark it up, and I'm off my face, man. And I'm in West North now. West North, Waikerea, you've got West South. Oh, actually, we'll backtrack a little bit. In Waikerea, you've got the prison and you've got the houses. Now, the houses are where people are deemed medium security, and they're able to go and work in the community.
Mm.
The prison is just the prison. And I'm up in the prison at this time. And I'm in West North. So you've got West South, then down you've got West North, then you've got the yard inside that, and then over the other side of the yard, you've got Central and classification, and on the other side of that, you've got East Wing. And I'm in West North, and I'm off my face. And I'm staring through this window with these bars in it. I'm looking at the most brilliant sky I've ever seen.
Mm.
And you know, like, I've only got a couple of weeks to get out, and I'd be, you'd think that I'd be just, all I could think about is counting down the seconds.
Yeah. Nearly there.
Absolutely, absolutely. The things I'm going to do, the people I'm going to see, the food I'm going to eat, the places I'm going to go. Yeah. But no, none of that. The first ever thought that popped into my head was, yeah, I'm coming back, and the next time I'm coming back, I'm never leaving. Tina, I'm institutionalized.
Yeah.
And I'm 17. I went to my first prison, Mount Eden, at 16. A year and a half later, I'm institutionalized, man. Like, I've got it in my head that, yeah, I'm getting out, but I'm going to get out and I'm going to do something that's, I'm either going to do one, something that's so heinous that they're never going to let me out again, or two, I'm coming back, something's going to happen, and I'm going to end up dead.
Wow.
Either way, I'm coming back and I'm never leaving. This is a 17-year-old thinking
this way.
And so you've got to think, how do we get to there in a year?
And like, I feel like when you say institutionalized, like, is that like a scary thing as a 17-year-old to experience? Like, there's no way out.
No,
because you're like, you know, you've got that mindset. When I get out, like, I'm gonna get back in, or I'm gonna, you know, do the most heinous thing, like you said, to make sure this is gonna be out.
Absolutely, there is no emotion to it. It's like a builder talking about the job he does. I build stuff, and now I'm a gangster, and I do gangster stuff. That's it. There is no emotion in it at all. It's just the cold facts, the cold reality of how life is, and that's the way the point I got to in a year or a year and a half, and so. The thing is that you've got to think, how did this happen, mate? For a young boy to this happen, and it's like I said, it was an evolution for me.
Mm.
It came out right at the beginning when I got uplifted from my grandparents, and I was on this transition, this pathway that was already mapped out for me.
Yeah,
and when I got to that point, and I was institutionalized, I hadn't got institutionalized that moment. It was this journey that got me there. And I'd already been institutionalized like when I was 8. Yeah? Yeah. So that's where I am. So that's the dark point. I'm of my evolution. I'm institutionalized. And that's the first thought that popped into my head.
Mm.
The very next thought was, well, it doesn't have to be like that. I don't know where that came from. But probably the weed. Okay, probably came from the weed, man. But that was all the thought. It was just that thought. Oh, it doesn't have to be like that.
You're getting different thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got out, right? And then I got out. And don't get me wrong, I still had the same stuff running in my head. I still went out and done that stuff. But that was one of those moments, and they amassed together because a year later, I'd pulled out of the gang.
Wow.
But I hadn't thought about pulling out of the gang back then. But on the day that I pulled out of the gang, I hadn't made the decision then. I had made it right back there, yeah? So that was the journey. That was the evolution. That's how my life has always been. It's always been this evolution for me.
Yeah.
And so now I'm out of the gang, and that cost me a bit of pain and stuff, but it is what it is. And I got me a job. The thing is, it was a bit, I guess, daunting because I didn't have these politics to live by.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the people that I hung out with anymore. And But I'm a good worker, so I got a job. And for a little while there, all I was doing was just spending my money on alcohol and drugs. And then it got to a point again in my evolution where I realized that I need to be somewhere else. Like, I've got some skills, but to make the change, I need to be somewhere else. So I jumped on a plane and went to Australia. And here's
Sibling Nation.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, though, right? Like with evolution, the main key with evolution is you have all these traits, and the traits that are beneficial to you and help you thrive and survive, you're able to keep.
Yeah.
And the other traits that are detrimental to you, you're able to get rid of them. And that's one thing that going to Australia helped me with, to get out of that gang mentality, and they lose that trait. But the really, really good trait that I got there was I am oppressed because I'm Māori, yeah? I have institutional barriers that have been put in place that are designed to prevent me from realizing my potential. In Australia, I'm not oppressed. Well, I am, but not to that degree. Mm. The people who, the Māori over there, are the Aboriginals.
Right.
They're I shouldn't use that word. That's a bad word. It's the Kuris and the Nungas. Yeah? They're the Māori over there.
Mm.
And they're the ones that are oppressed. And so for the first time ever, I got to sidestep that oppression and hang out with people that actually understood that they had potential and the ability to realize that potential. Yeah? So I'm now hanging out with these people and understanding that I have potential and ability to realize the potential. And mind you, that I'm still in this dark place, still doing naughty stuff. But it's all self-sabotage stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, drugs and alcohol and stuff. But the thing is that I'm hanging out with people that understand that they have potential and the ability to realize that potential. And I took that on board.
Mm.
Yeah. And I thrived through that. At that time, though, I got to admit, I was a drug addict. And then I went down to, I was evolving, and then I came to a point where I realized that the drugs weren't the way for me.
Yeah.
And I went down to South Australia and got into a rehab. It was amazing, man. It was awesome. That was the first time ever I understood all. I was sitting in a group. And I'd been there for about 3 or 4 days. I wasn't listening to anything, but then all of a sudden I started listening, and they were all telling what I was going on in my head. They're talking about the craziness. They're talking about the growing up as a kid, and it was me. They're talking about the craziness in their head, and it was me. It's talking about what they do to get drugs, and it was me. It's talking about like the need to get like just high to get rid of all that pain, and it was me. And the release that they get from getting high, and that was me. And I was going, wow, man! For the first time ever, I started seeing that there were people like me, that were actually doing stuff, and they were doing it. They were taking these drugs, but the same reason I was, and I got to understand that I wasn't choosing to take the drugs. There were things that happened to me.
Yeah.
And it was an action. I was doing it as a cause to numb what was going on for me. Yeah. And then I started accepting that no, I need to experience that stuff. I need to stop trying to feel numb about it and experience it.
And
be in this group that's very supportive while I'm doing this. And it was amazing, man. And I left that rehab with a whole different plan, man. I joined Narcotics Anonymous. I was a secretary at this place called Absolute Beginners every Friday night for 2 years. It's called Absolute Beginners because just anyone off the street can come in. It's a Friday night, 7 o'clock, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's the Friday night's the most vulnerable night for them, so I did that. But it got to a point where it wasn't enough. I needed to progress more. I went out and got me a job as security, working for this Māori Pātonga guy. Did really well. Then went and got my own business as a security. I was doing really well. Got me a car, bought me a house. Had a lot of money in the bank, got married. Here's the thing, though. I'd never been in a functional relationship, so I got a partner that was just as broken as me.
Yeah.
No way that was going to work out. And so 3 years later, lost the car, lost the house, lost the business, lost the wife, back using drugs.
Yeah.
Downhill again, man. And I'm in a dark place, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've tried my best. My best wasn't good enough. Maybe I should just go back to being what I'm good at. And I'm really good at being a gangster.
Yeah.
But this time, I've got potential and the ability to realize this potential. And I went out and decided to do that. 6 months later, I'm Sergeant Arms of the second biggest motorcycle club in the world.
This is in Oz?
This is in Oz. And I'm sitting in rooms now with very, very intelligent people making very, very intelligent decisions. And that's another trait I got. I started realizing that I am very, very intelligent.
Facts,
man. But then, like part of my evolution is, like, I knew I wasn't going to be there. That wasn't
just
me.
Just temporary little time.
But it was actually the right thing because I got there in a state of depression, so I was open to stuff. And then I got into this room, and I was, because I was open, I was able to take in all the stuff. And the thing that I was taking in is that trait of intelligence, man.
Yeah.
And it's not that they were giving me intelligence. I was started to understand and accept that I was intelligent. Here's a little segue. Magellan, he's got one of the best sayings. He says, "You can't teach anyone anything. You can only thing you can do is help them to find it within themselves."
No, that's true. You can't really force something onto someone.
Absolutely. You can't teach.
You gotta let them ignite it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so the thing is, I come back home. Heaps of skills.
Back to our
pedal. Yeah. Heaps of skills. Nothing on paper. But I'm back to being oppressed, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. And the thing is, I've either got to go back and study, or I've got to be happy digging drains. No way I'm going to go digging drains, man.
The drains do the money, but I get it.
Absolutely. And so the thing is, I got to go back and study. And so I look for something that out of the box to keep me interested. And so I go and study acupuncture. I'm an acupuncturist. Because I had this brilliant plan, Tina. I was going to travel the mutu, go to all the different marae, and treat all the kaumata and kuia, treat all the aches and pains under ACC.
Mm.
Man, I would have made millions. It would have been just me, and I would have had the whole country, and I would have locked it down, and I would have made millions. I would have grossed a million in my first year.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, that ACC wouldn't accept the business plan. They said, "You need a standalone clinic." I went, "Mate, my father knew is the yep. standalone clinic." And they go, "No," they wouldn't accept. So now I've got to go back and study. And so, but now I know that I like health. I like to be connected with the community, and I like autonomy. So I'm looking. Come up with paramedicine, and I go, "Okay, I'm going to apply for paramedicine, be a paramedic." And then the thing is, though, I've got to get vetted, and my rapport, my reputation has followed me back from Australia. So the thing is, yeah, I get knocked back. But hey, I've got potential ability to realize this potential, and I'm smart enough to put it together. I find out what the barriers are. I mitigate those barriers. I apply again. I'm in. And then, but here's the thing, right? I'm working full time. I've got a part time job in a drug and alcohol rehab, working Friday, Saturday nights. And then one night, some guy comes in off the street, kicks the front door. I chase him down the street. He comes at me. I push him away. He falls over, hits his head, and he dies 9 days later.
Crazy.
That's crazy, man. And the thing is, though, that everything's happened the way I said it happened,
yeah.
right? Everything's happened the way I said it happened. But, Tina, because I'm Māori, because I'm poor, because I got a history, because I'm back in the land that oppresses
yeah.
me, they charge me with manslaughter. Now,
it's like the odds are always...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm 4 months out from my final exam, and I'm fighting a manslaughter charge. And I'm thinking back to the day that I'm in prison, when I'm in prison and that, and all the bros used to come up to me and go, "Tum, the cops are offering me this if I plead guilty, but I didn't do it."
Mm.
And in the back of my head, I'm going, always going, "Yeah, yeah, you did." But the police... got to my lawyer and told, and she offered me, they said they would give me 3.5 years if I pleaded guilty, or if I plead not guilty, they're going to go maximum. The maximum for manslaughter is life in prison. I wouldn't have got life in prison, but I would have got a lot more than 3.5
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
So now I'm 3 months away from my final exam. I've got to decide whether or not to go along with it and plead guilty to something I didn't do, 3.5 years in prison, or fight it because I didn't do it, with the risk of getting a lot more. But hey, I've got the goods, and I challenge it, of course I got not guilty because there's nothing to prove. I was down for 8 days, I only lasted two because there's nothing to prove, and the jury was out for less than now. So I go out and be a paramedic. I understand we're out of time. I go through a paramedic. I get to a job. Woman, it doesn't work out that right. Woman passed away. I think if I had a few more tools, it might have turned out a bit better. So I go apply for medicine. It took me 4 goes to get in. I graduated 2019. I'm now working as a doctor up in Middlemore and Auckland hospitals. I've actually resigned full time, and I've gone part-time, casual now, and moved back to Mangere because part of my, this is the last part of my evolution at the moment, is I've decided to run in Mangere for the Mangere electorate in this year's election.
Being, and this won't be the